Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So dear, for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live. We are live. It's Monday night. It is July 30th. This is the Hour of Truth. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, and I am Dave. I am honored to have Lisa with me tonight. How are you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing very well, Dave. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Still hot on your side of the state?
It was lovely today.
Really?
Yeah, it was in the 80s.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. Oh, no, we hit 102.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we sure did, once again. So we're going to have Shane Scholer, Representative Shane Scholer, who'd like to be the next Secretary of State. Have you heard? Well, I know you heard it because I heard you specifically addressing it. Have you heard that ad of his where Secretary Carnahan picks up the phone and calls Jay Nixon to try to get his help in screwing the voters?
Oh, I don't know that I've heard. Is that the one that that's the one,
yeah.
I played the
card. Yeah. As long as we control the ballot and count the votes, we can do whatever we want to.
That's great. It was wonderful.
I had a couple of long discussions over the last few days with some of my liberal friends who are just absolutely up in arms by how horribly out of context we have taken the president's "you didn't build that" quote. You know the quote I'm talking about. Yeah, and in fact, here is the president's newest commercial. I'm going to play it. Folks, bear with us, for this is the longest cut we'll have in this segment. So listen to all of this now.
Those ads, taking my words about small business out of context, they're flat out wrong. Of course Americans build their own businesses.
But here's what President Obama said in full context.
If you've been...
So that is the president saying that we took his words out of context. In fact, he goes on to say that what he meant to say was we should support them.
Sure.
Yeah. So, here's the commercial. Here's the commercial that follows that took this excerpt now from, I want to say Americans for a Prosperity, but I can't say who originated it. I got to tip my hat to Carl Bearden because he's the one I got this from. It was at Missouri, United for Missouri today. So,
those ads, taking my words about small business out of context, they're flat out wrong. Of course Americans build their own businesses.
But here's what President Obama said in full context.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
President Obama, dreams are...
Okay, that goes on and on. That goes on and on. But I want to stop, and I'm just going to kind of paraphrase what some of the rest of that ad says. If you own a business, you didn't build that. There's a great teacher out there somewhere
Someone built the roads and bridges that made it possible for you to do what you do. You didn't build that, he repeats. Now, I got news for the president. It's the other way around from what he said. If you are successful, you built them damn roads and bridges. Them roads and bridges didn't make you successful. You built them roads and bridges. Obama didn't build them roads and bridges. You paid that teacher. So,
the man is the flipping president of the United States, and he runs out across the country and makes a speech in public, and he can't own up to what he said.
Exactly.
And the audacity to tell people that they didn't hear exactly what they heard.
That's right. And it even gets worse. Here we're gonna play cut two here, because this is what you heard now was absolutely in context. There were no words cut out of that, but it wasn't. There is some lead in. He said some things before he said that, and he said some things after he said that. And really, if you want to take that and call that context, it gets even worse.
The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet, so then all the companies could make money off the internet. The point is that when we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because we do things together. There's some things, just like fighting fires, we don't do on our own. I mean, imagine if everybody had their own fire service. That'd be a hard way to organize fighting fires. So we say to ourselves, ever since the founding of this country, you know what, there's some things we do better together. That's how we funded the GI Bill. That's how we created the middle class. That's how we built the Golden Gate Bridge or the Hoover Dam. That's how we invented the internet. That's how we sent a man to the moon. We rise.
So there we go. So what he does then is he goes ahead and he compares the success of all of these government organizations, which we've already discussed, the successful bought for him. He didn't buy them. The successful people in this country bought and paid for the man on the moon and the Hoover Dam, the GI Bill, and the firefighters. And by the way, he's addressing a group of firefighters here, so I'm sure that's how fighting fires got worked into all this great stuff. Not that firefighters aren't great. Don't be, give me a call and say I trashed firefighters. I certainly didn't. But he goes on then to say, after he says you didn't build that, that if it weren't for all of this stuff that the government did for you, that I guess Barack Obama and Claire McCaskill did for you, that you couldn't be successful. Well, the two things come to my mind, Lisa. One is, and we've already talked about this, Barack and Claire didn't buy those for the successful people. The successful people bought those for the successful people. That's where the money for the roads and bridges and the Hoover Dam and the GI Bill and the firefighters comes from. It's from the successful people. But the other thing that strikes me here is he's back in the damning part, the first cut, where he says you didn't build that. He talks about a good teacher and he talks about roads and bridges. And all of the stuff that the government built for me to have a successful business, and how it's not right for people to think, well, I'm so smart and that's why I'm successful, or I work hard and that's why I'm successful. Well, are the people who are less successful, do they have less access to the roads and bridges? Did they not have good teachers? I mean, what is the difference between the successful and the not successful? It isn't a good teacher. And it certainly isn't roads and bridges.
Well, at the heart of all of this, I mean, you know, it's all about we all have to be dependent on the government, and it's kind of a subliminal. If you have a self-esteem, then you won't be dependent on the government, and that's bad. It's all about knocking down your self-esteem and your efforts and the pride that you take in absolutely creating your own success so that you can be dependent on the government.
Yeah, you're right. And listen, this all goes back, all of it, it wraps up in one little nutshell and is reinforcing and reinforced by the first part of the speech, which we haven't even played yet.
I've So I'm going to reduce the deficit in a balanced way. We've already made $1 trillion worth of cuts. We can make another trillion or trillion two. And what we then do is ask for the wealthy to pay a little bit more.
There you go. He has cut $1 trillion, and he has created jobs. Now,
Did I miss that part somewhere?
Oh, yeah, let's...
So I'm going to reduce the deficit in a balanced way. We've already made $1 trillion worth of cuts. We can make another trillion or trillion two.
Oh, it didn't occur to me till I started playing that again that you weren't asking me if you missed him saying that. You were asking me if you missed his cutting of $1 trillion.
Do you think that would have been in the headline somewhere, $1 trillion worth of cuts?
I would have thought. Especially the headline, the headlines of the news media that is really just an extension of his campaign committee.
Right.
Yeah.
I missed that. I must have gone on a news blackout that day when that happened.
Exactly. So getting past the initial lies or the initial campaign rhetoric, we won't even call it lies. We'll call it the campaign rhetoric. Getting past that, he says that all we're asking is for people to pay their fair share, and that's what this whole thing comes down to. The successful person didn't build it, and so that gives us the right to take from him to pay the less successful. Because the less successful people, who the successful man or woman has given a job, those less successful people who had the same roads and bridges, who had the same access to teachers, those less successful people who are happy not having to work 20 hours a day, not having to risk their family fortune and their entire inheritance on a business idea. They're happy to go work for the successful man or woman for $12 to $15 to $20 an hour. They're perfectly happy with that until it comes time for something that they can't afford because they weren't successful. And then it's all about the successful man or woman didn't do this by themselves, so let's take from them. And I laugh and cry at the same time every time I hear this man say, "We're only asking you to pay your fair share." He ain't asking shit. He is telling you that you're going to pay more. There's no asking involved.
He'll do an executive order.
Well. Or if he wins another term in the White House, he'll do it by law. He'll get tax rates increased on these evil, nasty, rotten, successful people who didn't do anything, but rip off less successful people. He will make them, not ask them, make them pay whatever it is he considers to be their fair share. And that is really what it all boils down to, is this cut right here.
So I'm going to reduce the deficit in a balanced way. We've already made $1 trillion worth of cuts. We can make another trillion or trillion two. And what we then do is ask for the wealthy to pay a little bit more. And by the way, we've tried that before. A guy named Bill Clinton did it. We created 23 million new jobs. Turned the deficit into a surplus, and rich people did just fine. We created a lot of millionaires, and you know there are a lot of wealthy.
Right there. Did you hear that man say that the government created 23 million new jobs? Didn't have anything to do with the successful people. They didn't create any jobs. And then he went on to say that the government created new millionaires.
Well, yeah, the government gives all, and that certainly explains why Bill Clinton will be speaking at the Democratic Convention.
Yes. Yep. That's it just is incredible, then, that man can say anyone took anything out of context.
Those ads, taking my words about the small business out of context, they're flat-out wrong. Of course Americans build their own businesses.
But here's what President Obama said in full context.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
President Obama, dreams are built on hard work, not government. Those sleepless nights, they weren't for nothing. We risked it all because of an idea we believed in. And with the jobs we create and the taxes we pay, we built those roads and bridges. We built America.
What I said was that we need to stand behind them.
You didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Again, there we go. Thanks very much once again, Carl Bearden, for that great clip and for turning me on to that. That was fantastic. And that really is in a nutshell, the crux of the entire Obama mantra is everything belongs to the government. Everything belongs to the social network, and we will allow you to keep whatever portion of your earnings we decide belong to you. We're going to take a little break now. Shane Scholer will be with us here in a bit. He had another meeting to go to, and we're expecting him in the studio any moment. We'll be back with a little wrap on the Obama Minute, and then we're going to talk to Shane.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is the Voice of Liberty, Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Monday Night Hour of Truth on the 30th of July. I'm here. I'm Dave. And we'd like you to be here at 347-677-1835. Give us a call, 347-677-1835. If you're a conservative and you'd like to have a go at the context issue, give us a call. If you're a liberal and you'd like to have a go at me put me in my place for taking the president out of context, then you just feel free to call right in, 347-677-1835. And Lisa's here with me. Lisa's busy working the studio. Are you there, Lisa?
I'm still here.
She's still here. Lisa, we're going to talk to Shane Scholer. He's running for Secretary of State. And I'm telling you, I'll bet you a dollar that the better half of our listeners aren't really aware of everything that's involved in the Secretary of State. It is more than just writing some ballot language. The Secretary of State The Secretary of State is in the state of Missouri, the second well, I contend the first probably, but is at least the second most powerful elected office. The Secretary of State codifies all of the law. So the legislator, if you follow a piece of legislation, you'll see, you know, that it went to the House, it went to the Senate, it went back to the House. Finally, it was truly agreed to and passed, which means that both the Senate and the House passed it. It went to the governor, it got signed. And then what you'll read on, that it was forwarded to the Secretary of State. Well, it was the Secretary of State's job then to take that new law and codify it, that is, fit it in with the rest of the laws of the state of Missouri, put it in a section. And that sounds like just something that's easy to do, but not unlike people whose doctors don't pay too much attention when they write them a new prescription to what one can do bad to another, and people rely more and more on their pharmacist to look at their entire prescription record and say, oh, well, I better call your doctor. You shouldn't be taking these two things together. It is frequently the case that someone delivers a law that's been passed to the Secretary of State that just doesn't quite fit with the rest of the laws. That then would become a headache for the Secretary of State to work out. The Secretary of State is the keeper of the state register, keeper of the archives, the collator, not the keeper, but the collator of local and county records. It is the incorporation authority. So if you want an LLC or a corporation, the person you get approval for that from in the state of Missouri is the Secretary of State. It's a very powerful position. The notary authority, the keeper of the Uniform Commercial Code, and then, of course, we all know that that he or she is the chief election official in the state. So that's a pretty powerful job, and I think that really goes to the fact that, I mean, let's just look at the federal level. Of course, we all know who Robin Carnahan is because she's been in the news lately, but let's just look at the federal level and the Secretary of State, who has basically the same functions, except it also has the function of being our kind of emissary, chief emissary to other countries. But in the history of the country, and even right now, everybody knows the name of the Secretary of State. And in the state, I mean, the last Secretary of State, everybody knew the name. The current Secretary of State, everybody knows the name. But could you tell me the Secretary of the Treasury? Well, I mean, the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary and the Attorney General both have been fairly high profile in a slanderous way almost under this president. But generally, the average person can't tell you the name of the Secretary of the Treasury or the Secretary of Education or the Secretary of Justice, that is the Attorney General, because those names just aren't out there every day. Those aren't powerful positions but the Secretary of State is a very, very powerful position and has a lot of responsibility. So it's pretty important that we vet the people that we vote for Secretary of State fairly thoroughly. And unfortunately, the last time we voted for a Secretary of State, I don't believe we did so. In fact, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is at war right now with Secretary of State, are we not?
Of Missouri?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
We don't like the way she writes ballot language.
That's exactly right.
And we haven't said about it.
Yeah. If you're interested, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and check on the link for the grass fire alert, and you'll see what we're talking about. But give us a rundown on that, Lisa.
Well, Robin Carnahan, in her infinite wisdom, after the House and Senate handed her the gift of doing so, wrote some very inflammatory ballot language, inflammatory in my opinion, which totally misrepresents Proposition E that everyone will see on the ballot in November, allowing the executive branch of the Missouri government to be able to reinstate
insurance
changes. Yeah. Yes, thank you. So it's very confusing ballot language. And it's going to be very difficult for the people of Missouri to be able to understand. And it was very deceptive the way it was written. So it's going to be very difficult for the people of Missouri to understand why it is not a good idea for the executive branch to have carte blanche power over installing insurance exchanges in Missouri. And it's going to be the major catalyst in initiating Obamacare in Missouri.
And so, and additionally to it being inflammatory, it was written so that you it is intended to confuse you as to which side you're coming down on if you check yes, and which side you're coming down on if you check no. Am
absolutely.
I right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's extremely confusing. I don't have the ballot language in front of me at the moment, but it does start out, it states, you know, shall the state of Missouri deny coverage? You know, well, it's absolutely twisted in the way it's worded. It's going to make everybody think that we're being brutal, heartless people denying coverage to, you know, people who cannot afford health care, and that's not the case. And it doesn't have anything to do or explain in any way about the insurance exchanges and who has the power to initiate those or not under any kind of guidance or regulation or accountability that would be given to the legislature. So this would not be happening if this passes.
Now, in all fairness, what it says is not that we're going to we're out there trying to deny coverage to people, but that we're out there trying to deny health care to people. And I'm going to go back to something that I've said 100 times, and I'm going to say it 100 more times. Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, has nothing to do with health care. Zero. Zero. It has to do with health insurance. And access to health insurance is not even close to the same thing as access to health care.
Well, I mean, you know, if you peel away the onion, you know, peel away all the layers of the onion, this is really all about making health insurance companies richer and richer and government richer and richer. This doesn't have, and it's right, it doesn't have anything to do with giving people coverage for health care, making sure that people stay healthy and, you know, have all of the health care that they need when they need it. This is about padding the pockets of the bureaucracy of the government and their lobby, which is the health care lobby.
And making more people dependent on the government.
Yeah, insurance exchanges.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to put some more information up there on the Grassfire Alert about healthcare exchanges. The Cato Institute does some great work and has some great information on there, so look for that soon. Really, we shouldn't be having healthcare exchanges at all, you know, run by the House of Representatives or the executive branch. Really, what we need is a free market system. Have the healthcare exchanges limiting our ability to have competition.
Okay. The other thing that we're doing, and we'll have this taken care of for you folks by early next week at the latest. Well, maybe by the day after the primary, because we don't want to shift focus from the primary and Amendment 2 right now. So the day after the primary, we will have ready and up for you at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. If you want it, just so you don't have to go out and create this on your own, a one-page flyer that you can print as many copies of as you want and pass out at your meetings, at your door-to-doors, at whatever it is that you do, that basically defines for people what you're voting for if you check yes and what you're voting for if you check no. It cuts through all the garbage. It cuts through all the health care or not health care. It cuts through all the ballot language, and it just gets down to this is what you're voting for if you vote yes, and this is what you're voting for if you vote no. So look for that on the day after the primary, download it, print off as many copies as you want or need. It's not in any way copyrighted. It's out there for free use. Lisa and I put it together. If you have any suggestions about what could make it better, and we want to keep this. Don't write to me and say that we need to to write some kind of ballot language that makes Robin Carnahan look bad, because we want to keep this just factual, just kind of middle of the road, clearly factual as to what the ballot language is. This is what you're doing if you vote yes, and this is what you're doing if you vote no. I would just assume that someone who wants to vote no know the answer to what they're voting for or against when they vote, as I would someone that votes yes.
Right. And we need to be clear. At this point, I don't really believe that we can change the ballot language. We just need to be able to educate people as to what the ballot language is.
Right.
Ballot language, I think, is etched in stone at this point, and there's no change in it. So, but you know, if she's going to go fight dirty and put false ballot language out there for people to be confused by, the least that we can do is try to educate people as to what the truth is about the language. And so, in true grassroots style, boots on the ground style, we're going to ask you to share that information. We'll have this information out there for you on our website to share. Pick it up, pass it around, put it out there, and hopefully we can educate the folks so that they really know what they're voting on. And maybe when they see this, they'll also understand how important it is to get Robin Carnahan out of office.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's something that's got to be done. No two ways about it. Robin Carnahan is not even running, is she?
I'm not aware of that. We can look on the SOS. Let me look on the SOS website.
Maybe she is. I don't know. She'd have to go if she was anyway. As would Claire. Now, while Lisa's looking that up, I want to tell you folks something else about something exciting that's come up here just in the last week. On election night, on primary night, Tuesday, August 7th, we will be having here at Missouri Grassroots Radio Network for the entire evening a watch party / results show. I'll be putting out some written advertising on this beginning tomorrow, but we will be... I believe Lisa will be here. I believe Vaughn will be here. I believe Mike Smith will be here, and I will be here at a minimum. We may have some more people, and we'll need them because this is going to be a long session, and none of us can talk really nonstop for more than 60 minutes or so at a time. So we will be having this watch party / results night on August the 7th. If you are out there and you are a candidate or a principal for a candidate, and you would like us in the results night, we're going to have some analysis. We're going to be delivering results from all over the state. So if you would like or allow us to call your victory party, we would love to talk to you as this progresses. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back. I believe I see Shane Scholler, Representative Shane Scholler, in the studio. And so we're not going to take a break now because I'm pretty sure that that's him, and we're going to just move on with it. So, okay. So we've talked a little bit about what the Secretary of State does, and we'll be bringing Representative Scholler in a moment. I think we are ready. Are we ready, Lisa?
We're ready. We have Shane on the line.
All right. Representative Scholler, how are you tonight?
Hey, doing good. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good. Let's go ahead and just start with the easy part. I know you're busy. Where are you at tonight?
Well, we're actually on the road heading back to Springville here.
Okay.
We're in St. Louis right now, so we just met with.
So it's kind of different.
Yeah.
It's kind of different running for a statewide office as to just knocking on doors in your little legislative district, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
How's the family holding up to that?
Well, I think they'll be glad for next Tuesday to come for at least a little reprieve, assuming that we win next Tuesday night, which we feel like we're in a very good position to do.
I've been looking around. I've been looking around quite a bit, and I feel like you're in a very good position myself. So I was telling the folks here that, you know, we hear a lot about the Secretary of State and almost totally in the negative here in the last 3 or 4 years. And almost totally in the negative with respect to elections. But there's a lot involved in this job besides just writing some ballot language, isn't there?
There is. I mean, as far as overall duties of the office, it's the most diverse office of any statewide elected office and certainly assumes the most responsibilities.
I think I was just saying that. I think everyone would agree that it probably is the second most powerful office in the state, and I would contend that as far as divergence of responsibility and authority goes, that it may well be the most powerful elected office in the state.
I agree. When you look at, you know, the, you know, you look what Carnahan's done just with ballot language, you know, unfortunately when that job's, you know, used in the wrong way, you can look at what a damaging effect it has on your state, and then you just look at the administrative rules, where all the rules and regulations go through Secretary of State's office that are written by the bureaucrats, and that's where you have the opportunity to stop them from going outside of the authority that was written in the legislation as well as the Missouri Constitution. And how many of us have heard, you know, many, many times, you know, where did this regulation come from? Because we certainly can't find it in any state statute that was passed or any in the Constitution itself. And that's when we know that's bureaucrats gone wild, you know?
Exactly. So tell me, you sat in the last legislative session. So tell me how it happens that, I mean, the legislature went out of their way, I'm sure, because of the secretary's history with really being dishonest. And I'm just gonna say it like it is, with being dishonest with ballot language, went out of their way to make sure that they covered themselves on Amendment 2 by writing the ballot title and language themselves. Can you tell me why they didn't do that with Prop E?
You know, I don't have a good answer. I know that Amendment 2 had been in the legislature for a number of years now. The Health Insurance Exchange, excuse me, I have a cold here that I'm still struggling with since I was on last week. That came up from the Senate, and we actually did not see that legislation on the floor of the House until the day before the last day of session, which at that point, anything that is controversial in nature like that, I mean controversial in that, we know that there's a number of Democrat senators who would oppose anything that would have, you know, would propose to stop Obamacare from coming to Missouri. At that point, it was too late to, you know, recorrect our path and go back. So I'm not quite sure why the Senate chose not to write that language, because I certainly think it would have been appropriate for them to do that. But at the end of the day, what we tell folks is this is why it's important that you elect a Secretary of State that you can trust, as well as, you know, we put forth the idea of the Fair Ballot Accountability Act, which would help hold every Secretary of State accountable, because, you know, I visit with people and I'm like, there is a very good likelihood that you will elect another Secretary of State with that kind of bias. Now, I'm biased, and then I'm going to make the assumption that's going to be a liberal that's going to write their own bias in there again, like Carnahan has. And when you have that instance occur, if you have this Fair Ballot Commission we're talking about, which I believe it should be made up of volunteer citizens, it's something that I changed in the bill when I originally introduced it. So I think the citizens' voice needs to be represented, and that's something that we I personally think when you have accountability, you end up doing a better job, and you're going to think twice, as well as it helps avoid the legal cost and the time-consuming elements you have when you have to go to court, like we're doing with this health insurance exchange language that we're trying to fight through the courts now.
Exactly. And would you be in favor then, Representative, of a fair ballot language that made that, and I'll tell you, I know the legislature, because of their history with Secretary Carnahan, wrote the language for Amendment 2. However, that is a dangerous precedent, because, you know, 10 years from now, we could wake up and have a legislature that's as far left as the current Secretary of State. Would you be in favor, once you got this commission established, of that being just the place for ballot language to be written?
Well, I think it's certainly an idea worth consideration. For example, when I originally filed the bill, we had put forth the idea that people who were already elected to office in the state legislature would be picked between House and Senate leadership. And then the other idea that we had at the time was that we wanted to make sure that, you know, each ballot measure would go before them. But then as we began to talk about it a little bit more, you know, began to think the only time that you really need to do that is when there is dispute over the wording. It wouldn't make sense for them to be called upon every time. But I do think that currently the Constitution is the Secretary of State's duty to write that language. And so I'm open to discussion, but I certainly think that regardless, we need to have accountability there, and that's what you'd like the Secretary of State to do. But when it doesn't happen, you want to make sure you have that accountability, and that's where I think the citizen's voice needs to be heard more clearly, and that's a good way to do it. So that's, like I said, I've had that proposed from other folks. I just haven't come down to a formed opinion yet of whether or not that's the best way to go forward, and that's part of the reason I'm proposing an independent election commission if I'm elected. And one of the things that I want to do is I want to take all of the laws that regard elections, and I really want to take a fine, you know, tooth comb and put together local election officials and local citizens to take a look at our election laws, including the right of ballot language, and really put to forth a comprehensive plan so that we can have the best practices to protect every election going forward and making sure that, you know, all of our laws that affect elections, the ballot language has written, will be reviewed at the time.
Good. Good. Now, that sounds fine to me because people, a lot of people may be listening tonight even, and we have some of the, I mean, our listeners are the activists here. So,
right.
So,
and that's why I've told people, I don't want just local election officials. I want citizens on this commission as well, because too often, as you know, when you get into an office, you only see it from your point of view. That's why
right.
citizens needs to be heard.
And it's not, I mean, it's not just about ballot language. It's about timing of elections. I mean, the secretary has lots of ways besides ballot language that he or she can play with the system.
That's right. That's right.
So,
and that's where I think we need to do everything we can. I mean, clearly there's a lot of questions now about the number of elections that we go through, you know, throughout a year, the cost that is to the taxpayers. So there's questions about that. So I think we take all of those different ideas underneath consideration and see how we can move forward, as well as what can we do to make sure we do a better job of having poll watchers at elections. Because right,
right
now it's very hard for the poll watchers to show up and help hold local election officials and the judges they put forth accountable.
Okay, now I'm going to and we're going to go a little bit. I don't know if Christy sent to you the letter that I sent to her today, but we're going to shuffle the order a little bit because we don't have as much time as we wanted to. But I'm
right.
going to go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and jump from this then into why you tell me, and I know you have a good answer for this, and these listeners who are riding the anti-incumbent wave, who are riding the anti-career politician wave, and you know, you've been with Blunt, you've been with Ashcroft, you've had your time in the legislature. Tell us why you're different than
someone who's been elected. You know, about a year ago, I was actually on an internet talk radio program at the time, and the question was, should we have more or less legislators elected in the government? And, you know, the person that had the radio show began to advocate that we should have less people, and or actually more people, like they have in New Hampshire. And so we began to have that discussion, and finally, I said to the individual, I said, regardless of whether you have more people that are in the state legislature or less people in the state legislature, if you don't elect people of good, moral, honest, decent character that are driven by their principles, you're going to continue to Kearney province of our nation, they were involved for a number of years in the forming of our government as a nation, and you look at the job that they did, and it's amazing how well the product was, you know, despite the number of years that they stayed involved in elected form of government, as well as putting together the elected form of government that we have today. I think that's where you have to know what are the values that drive you as a conservative, and stick to those principles, and I think you also have to have a good, solid moral foundation that keeps you driven towards honesty and doing the right thing. It doesn't mean you don't make mistakes, because I will tell you that in the legislature, there have been votes after the fact that I think, you know, I probably did not make the right vote at that time, but I'm going to learn from it and make sure I do better. And I think that's one thing you can never discount, and that's where, you know, I'm a firm believer accountability makes you better in the long run. And I tell people that I represent currently legislature, I want your accountability, I want your input, and I don't want you to call me and tell me every time you think I'm doing right. I really want you to call and let me know when you think I'm not making a good decision or I haven't gotten through an issue clearly enough. And that is, I think, who we want to be electing into government today, is people that understand they don't always have all the answers, they don't always have all the solutions, but they have the heart of the servant that wants to do the right thing and is willing to use the, you know, as we know as conservatives, we have a very strong, I think, set of values that drives us, and that is we don't want to increase government, we want to decrease government, we don't want to increase taxes, regulations, we want to decrease taxes, we want to decrease regulations, because we understand that the more you allow man to be able to make his own decisions and yet have a system of accountability in that, which you do with free enterprise, it's not always going to be perfect, but it's going to be a lot better than a government bureaucrat making that decision for you, which we know almost 9 times out of 10 is going to fail, and probably more likely 10 times out of 10 is going to fail, because the free market is not involved when you put more regulations and more taxes involved.
Okay, that's great. I think the current anti-incumbent wave is good for us because it is time to clean house. But I want to be clear that in my book that doesn't apply to just throwing everyone out. There are,
right.
and that is why I personally am against term limits myself. You know, we get a guy up there or a woman who finally is the right fit for us, and we build in a retirement date for them. But that's beside the point. I didn't come here to discuss term limits.
And what
because,
I tell people is that if we're going to have term limits, we need to have term limits on staff and lobbyists too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, as you know, the biggest issue you have, and I'm not going to advocate against term limits. I mean, I've elected on term limits. I'm okay with term limits. I understand the arguments against them. But I also would tell people that are for term limits that as long as you have people there who oftentimes have been there longer and don't always tell the people that are elected the whole story, you're going to continue to. And that's where my point is, you have to elect people of good moral honesty and character, and they need to understand the difference between the people that are trying to take advantage of them when they get elected to office, that are the lobbyists and staffers, and the people that are not. And that's extremely important, because ambition, as you know, oftentimes it ends up becoming the ruination of a lot of good people when they get elected to office.
It does. It does. So tell us, I mean, you've been there, you know, you've got a guy, and I'm telling you, you know, I personally, and you and I stomp in the same woods, so I would bet a dollar that you personally know Billy Long. What,
yeah.
I mean, Billy's a good guy. What happens to a guy like Billy Long when he gets up there that, you know, in 6, 8, 10 weeks, it's a disaster?
It's, you know, and Billy, you know, I campaigned at the time for Jack Goodman. You know, I'm friends with Billy now.
Me too, yeah.
Absolutely. I think that when you have someone that is elected for the first time, and I'm not saying this is necessarily the case with Billy, but as you said, you've seen it happen in that people get elected. And the problem is, and I can more refer to this as a city. time, they begin to talk about FEMA, they begin to talk about things other than the legislature, that lobbyist knows what the likes and dislikes are of the individual they're working with, and pretty quickly, sometimes it's sooner rather than later, sometimes it's later, suddenly that person forgets all the people's doors they knocked on and all the people they met out in the public and said, that's why I want to elect you, because of what you just told me. And then you get up there and they forget about it because suddenly they're listening to a completely different audience that is betraying the very campaign platform that they campaigned on. And that's where I'm telling you, the accountability when you're elected in office is so important, because that's why our founding fathers, they understood we get a king who could issue an edict and everybody has to comply unless you have a rebellion. Well, that's not a good system. I mean, having rebellion is not necessarily a good outcome either, because you don't know who's going to replace the king, but it gets worse. And so they at least put together a system of government where you have the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary, where you have that real checks and balances, where no one entity is able to move forward too quickly than the other. And while we don't appreciate what we've seen our federal government do, at least we still have a recourse that we can address it as a nation, rather than just, you know, rising up and rebelling, you know, in the streets, which, as we can see in other nations, doesn't always work out that well.
Absolutely.
So back to your question about, I think a lot of it is they never understood the basis of the values they were elected with, and that's what they end up doing there. And because they don't have that good, firm foundation, they end up going along with people they end up liking, because it's more about likes and dislikes of people they know than based upon the convictions of the platform that they campaigned on.
So tell me if this is true or false. And I know you've never served in Washington D.C., and it probably isn't the same in Jefferson City. So it's fair just to say I don't know the answer. Is it true that when you get to Washington D.C. and I don't know if it's this way in Jefferson City, I don't know if it's this way in Washington D.C. When you get to Washington D.C., your first week, that someone from the quote unquote party comes along and starts planning with you your next run?
I don't know about that in Washington, D.C. Certainly the small town that I worked for, Congressman Blunt out there when he was in Congress, I didn't see that. I do know that, of course, just like in Missouri politics, you know, you do work very hard in order to be able to get more fellow Republicans elected. And so they do, I think, in Washington, D.C., just like you see back here at the Missouri level, you try to get, you know, individual members to do fundraising to help out other members who are going to be in a lot tighter seats, who are going to be more revenue to be able to overcome the challenges and the hurdles that they come up. And that probably be the closest thing, but I'm not aware of any, this is your campaign plan, this is what you're going to do. If that's the case, I'm not saying not, I'm not aware of it.
Okay. And I don't think that between all of the caucuses up there, they can put enough money together to help out, Claire McCaskill, but that's yet
right.
to be seen.
Exactly.
we're gonna stay in the same ballpark here and just maybe steer from left field to center field. The audience here ranges these folks that are listening to us tonight and who will come along and listen to the podcast ranges probably from the farthest right evangelical conservative to the farthest to the closest anarchist libertarian you can get, and and almost completely they were disappointed with the last legislative session. Come May, and how are you feeling about that?
You know, as far as what we were able to accomplish, I would concur. I certainly wanted to do more, because I'm a strong right-to-work proponent. Matter of fact, you know, Speaker Tilley and I, we had many discussions where we disagreed and vocally disagreed with one another in leadership meetings about this issue. Now, Steve is a friend of mine. I think he was, you know, I think his opinion on it could have been a lot better, and he knows that. And yet, we were able to continue to have civil conversations about it. But I think to get the state back on track, we need to make sure that people are not forced to join a union in order to hold the unions more accountable. problem with that is over in the Missouri Senate, where, because, I mean, we passed through the House on more than one occasion some form of a fair tax. And we never had a problem passing out of the House, but we always had a problem being able to carry that through the Senate.
Yeah.
Because of the way the rules are set up. And so I know that was certainly a disappointment that we weren't able to, because at the end of the day, if we continue to not live in a state where people are free to be able to do with their hard income if they so choose, then, I mean, you look at the Index of Economic Freedom, people are going to go to states where they're able to make their own choices, and they're not told, you know, how those choices are going to be made. And that's why if we look at, you know, our state next to us, Tennessee, has just continued to grow in leaps and bounds. States like Texas have continued to grow in leaps and bounds because they have allowed more economic freedom in their state. And as you know, economic freedom is not just about the money you're able to spend, but it's about how you're able to use your property as you see best fit to be able to earn your own living. And that's something that I think we have to do a better job of in the state, because the less private property rights, the less income your citizens earn, and that's been proven time and time again.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I personally, and 99%, if not 100% of the people listening to this show right now, and even of members of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition and their associated groups are fair taxers, both federal and state.
When I first campaigned, I was, you know, that's when I was first introduced to the idea of the fair tax, and I did not sign on to it at that time. I just said, I know we need to lower taxes, but I want to look at the fair tax versus the flat tax. And I'll tell you what ultimately turned my opinion was realizing when people are able to make their own choices with their own hard-earned income based upon the taxes they want to pay and the purchases they make, you are allowing greater economic freedom, which the flat tax would be better than the current tax system we have. But at the end of the day, if you're paying a flat tax, you still, in my opinion, have less freedom with your money than when you're able to pay a sales tax only.
Absolutely. Now we're going to get to one more thing here that has to do with this before the only break we're going to have tonight, since we were a little shortened. And that is, I want to hear from you. What is that one keystone issue that when your time in this office is done, that if this isn't done, you'll feel like you weren't successful? What is that number one issue for you when you get there in January?
Now, are you talking about if I'm elected Secretary of State or
yes,
my
yeah.
current
position? No.
Okay,
when,
okay,
as
good,
the Secretary
good.
Of State, that one thing that you want to be able to wrap your arms around and say, I got to get this done or I'm just not, I just wasn't successful.
I think that the key issue is that we need to get photo ID implemented at the state. And, of course, that takes working with the legislature, making sure that we get the issue put back on the ballot. As you know, it was taken off the ballot earlier this year.
Right.
Because the courts disagreed with the Voter Protection Act. But we have got to continue to tell people, and I tell people this is not a Republican idea. It's not a Democrat idea. It is for every single voter participates. And I tell people, voter fraud is not exclusive to one party.
It's not a partisan thing, yeah.
Exactly. And so we need to do all we can to make sure every single election is protected from voter fraud. And so we need to do that. And we also need to do more to show proof of citizenship when people register to protect elections. Because, you know, Rasmussen did a poll earlier this year. 60% of Americans believe some form of voter fraud exists in the elections in which they cast a ballot in. Well, when you get to that high a percentage, what's going to happen is less and less people are going to participate in elections because they don't believe their vote counts anyway. Well, then, as you have less and less legitimate voters participate, then it's that much easier for voter fraud to be able to change the outcome of an election, because it's going to take less, you know, you'll have less legitimate voters, and potentially those people who are going to commit voter fraud are going to have easier time to be able to perpetrate voter fraud.
Right, and their percentages of the total vote of the total voting public is going to be higher. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Okay. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. You're on the Monday night hour of truth. Lisa's here somewhere, and we are talking to Representative Shane Scholer, who's going to be the next Missouri State Secretary. We're going to come back after this break, and we're actually going to do something, Shane, that my viewers are used to, but you may not be, and that is we're going to wrap up with what is usually the first thing you probably do on shows like this, and that is we're going to get to know you and who you are and what makes you what you are. After this break, more with Shane. It's 347-677-1835. It's 347-677-1835. If you want to talk, we'll be back in a moment.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and then...
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're turning the tide here at Missouri Grassroots Radio, the voice of liberty. This is the Monday Night Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. Lisa's in the studio, and we are talking with Representative Shane Scholer, who is going to be the Secretary of the State of Missouri, so you might as well get used to it and give him a call and feel him out. 347-677-1835. Representative Scholer, I've thought about this, and I don't really have a feeling for it one way or the other, but you look at the federal government, and the executive branch up there is, for better or for worse, ideologically aligned. The president is elected, and he picks his Secretary of State, he picks his Secretary of the Treasury, he picks his treasurer, whatever the, and his Attorney General. And so you get this ideological alignment up there. And when I look at the state, and I see the infighting, I see an attorney general that tells the governor to shove it up his nose and a secretary of state who tells the legislator to go jump off a cliff. I sometimes get a little bit dismayed that we even get things done. Is there anything to be said about maybe doing something different at the state level?
Well, I'm a firm believer that, and I think this is a reason the states have been more effective at the federal level, is that when you're able to have more checks and balances, and frankly having, people elected for attorney general, secretary of state, and those different positions, you have a better, for example, I've told people, when Matt Blunt was secretary of state and Bob Holden was governor, he tried to issue an executive order to unionize all the state employees for the state of Missouri.
Right.
Which is exactly what Wisconsin just walked away from. This year. Well, we would have been 10 years down that road had you had a governor who would have been able to choose the Secretary of State, because Secretary of State would have just rubber-stamped everything the governor did in their executive orders. So I personally think that we are better off by having the people be able to elect who those leaders are and be able to have that check and balance. And you have a better probability of having a good outcome of government, whereas clearly, if everybody from top to bottom is Republican or Democrat, you're probably going to have a lot harder time being able to make sure that the people's voice is truly represented, whether it's Republican or Democrat.
Right. Is there anything, then, at the executive level that can be done? Let's say things are a little different. Let's say that Bill Randles was the governor here for the last 4 years, and you know, the Missouri people say by 71% that they want no mandate in Missouri, and the Obamacare nullification sails through the House of Representatives, and let's just go out on a limb and say that it actually makes it through the Senate, gets to the governor's desk and gets signed, and then you've got an attorney general who just won't act on that. What do you do then?
Well, I think, you know, clearly, you know, you're going to have those situations that happen where if you had an attorney general who had different, you know, beliefs set, that somehow they would be able to stop that. I do think that as a legislature, if you had the right governor, you could put forth your own attorney, although that would not necessarily be the best outcome.
Right.
You could hire an attorney to represent the state, you know, the legislature, the governor in that issue. You know, if the attorney general is supposed to be by law, whether they agree or disagree with an issue, they're supposed to advocate on the behalf of what is passed by the legislature and or the governor. They're not supposed to have that option.
Right.
But if that happened, there would still be some recourse you would be able to take with the legislature. It would not be optimal, no, that's for sure. And I would agree with that. I think that when you look at what's happened, you know, for example, with Governor Nixon and Secretary Carnahan during the time that Nixon's been there, you know, one of the bills that we tried to pass was to take away the power of the governor being able to unilaterally appoint when there's a statewide vacancy.
Right.
And, you know, Nixon, as you know, vetoed that legislation underneath the premise that he didn't want to increase election costs, but clearly that was not the case. You know, he wanted to keep that power of appointment. And that's an example where I think you want to continue to put those types of decisions out there with people and not have an outcome like you had Governor Voigtlevich in the state of Illinois, where clearly the more power governor had ended up becoming a problem for the state of Illinois. Somebody said the joke, you know, the state of Illinois is the only state where the governors make the license plates.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was pretty appropriate.
Yeah, right. Okay, you know, and like I said, I'm certainly not in any position to argue with you on that. I don't have a feeling one way or the other, but but I do I do notice the difference as I look at the federal level and then just look at, and it's really only been really bad in my experience in the last 4 years, the disconnect that's going on up there, and I think that we have an attorney general in office now who's going to learn pretty quickly that it might not be in his best interest that he works for the people instead of the executor. Okay, so really quickly then one more thing on politics before we get into who is Shane Scholer. You've got a veto session coming up. You want to go out on a limb with that with me at all?
Well, I think that the one issue that we're going to work extremely hard to override, you know, is that Governor Nixon vetoed legislation that would have allowed insurance companies and businesses to be able to opt out of the mandate when it came to, you know, the abortion mandate as well as the other portions of that mandate.
Right.
So I think that we're certainly going to work hard to get that, you know, overridden. Governor Nixon had, and I think there's a good chance based upon the vote margins we have in House and Senate to be able to do that.
Good. Good. Okay. So here we go. Now, tell the folks quickly where you come from and what your background is. I mean, I mentioned a couple of things, but you're pretty extensively versed in how government works.
Yes. You know, I'm a kid that grew up, for the most part, in Southwest Missouri. We came from Kansas when I was fairly young, and basically from the third grade on, I grew up in Branson, Missouri, which you don't get much of a better place to be able to learn, you know, the basic common sense conservative values that I have today than in Branson, Missouri. And then went to school up at Southwest Baptist University, and that's where during the end of my sophomore, towards my junior year, I believe it was, Roy Blunt came to be our president at that time because he had just ended his campaign for governor. And I had always, you know, had a deep interest in elected form of government. So a calling at that time, even then, that I needed to be serving in some form or capacity. And so so he'll only be able to get on to then-Governor Ashcroft's campaign, who had just ended his time as governor back in 92, and I was able to go work for his campaign in 94, and then not by necessarily choice, but just kind of by serious decisions, ended up being able to work for him when he went to the U.S. Senate, which was not my original idea. I wanted to go on to graduate school, but they wanted me to come work for him, and so I did. And then when Roy Blunt went to Congress, he came and asked me to come to Washington with him. And that was, you know, at that young of an age, just out of college, just by a couple of years, you know, you certainly learn a great deal that you're not going to get an opportunity otherwise as far as, you know, how federal government works. And I tell people, it was a little frightening sometimes to see the people that are elected to Congress that are helping make laws. That, you know, when you look at, you know, while I know some of the listeners have disagreed, you know, with Roy at times, he was clearly one of the much more competent members, and it was very evident very quickly on when I worked for him that he was going to be one of the rising stars, because not every congressional district elects people that would probably have a hard time winning state representative here in Missouri, if that makes sense to you. So a little side note there, but always I think your audience would appreciate that. After that, my wife and I, we got engaged and married, and she was attending law school at MU, and that's when Matt Blunt became Secretary of State. So I went to work for him for a couple of years and then came back home. And there's an organization known as SIFE, Students in Free Enterprise, and they're based on about 1,400 campuses worldwide. And the organization was created in response to President Carter when he became president, because at the time, a number of successful business owners and entrepreneurs truly believed that the Carter administration would be the undoing of the free enterprise system we know here in the United States. And so went to work for them for a year, and then the Home Builder Association, which really is kind of near and dear to my heart because my dad was a carpenter growing up. They came and asked me to help them fight the local bureaucrats who continually wanted to increase regulations and the fees associated with building. And so for 2 years, I fought local bureaucrats and city managers who always seemed to think they knew better than anybody else about how to promote the building industry. And at the end of the day, we knew every time they increased a fee or put on one more unnecessary regulation, they were just, you know, putting forth the continued strangulation of the housing market. If you look at states like California especially, I mean, yes, what happened in the financial sector of the world as far as the home loans was a problem, but if you look at the overinflated price of homes due to all the additional fees that were created, you know, in some states, especially like California, you would almost pay $100,000 worth of fees before you were even able to break ground on your home. And we saw that beginning to creep up slowly in Southwest Missouri because these city managers were always trying to look for new money in order to support their spending habits that they had at the local level. And I'm sure you're all familiar with that. I mean, a lot of cities have gotten into all these new rec centers and all these things that are they're nice, but in my opinion, a local city needs to take care of police protection. They need to take care of roads, and they need to take care of utilities, making sure that you have your water and your electricity and your gas. And that's what they should stick to, and they shouldn't be getting out and doing all these other ideas that you know, they're not wrong in themselves, but they should not be run or owned by the city or the taxpayers.
I agree, and I'm going to tell you right now, I take full advantage of the Greenway Trail. My dog and I go out and walk on it, and I take advantage of the dog park. But I'm with you. I mean, if it went on my ballot, if it went on my ballot tomorrow, I'd say no. Give me back my money and take the dog park and the Greenway Trail away, and we'll go out to my brother's park and walk around.
Well, as long as your taxpayer dollars are paying for it, you should. But that doesn't make you necessarily agree that that's the best direction to go.
So, tell us, we're going to sidetrack here for just 15 seconds. Your experience with SIFE, I get called a fearmonger all the time. How much trouble are we in if Obama gets reelected? Are we done?
You know, I'm not a fearmonger either, but I truly believe that corporate America and entrepreneurs will pack up and They'll either shut their businesses down and live on their retirement. They're certainly not going to expand, and they certainly won't do anything to create jobs because of what they've witnessed in the past 4 years. So I think it could be very difficult to overcome 4 more years of Obama. And that's frightening for me because I think about my children. I tell people this, you know, Emma, Dorothy, and Johnny. Emma's 8, Johnny's 2, and our daughter Dorothy's 5. I mean, Emma's already home. I mean, to me, when you're 8, she's very close to being 18 in terms of real human. You know what I'm saying? And in 10 years, it would be very hard to overcome in the last 6 years what 4 more years of the damage that Barack Obama could do.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I'm sorry, audience, that I sidetracked on that. That doesn't have anything to do with the Missouri government and nor with who.
Well, it does because we keep having to incur all the cost of these outrageous federal mandates.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So as we're going to look at, you know, we look up on the presidential stage, and I pick the presidential stage because it's the same stage for everybody in the state who's listening today. And we see Ron Paul, Republican. We see Mitt Romney, Republican. We see Michelle Bachmann, Republican. We see John Huntsman, Republican. Where in that ideological spectrum of everything that is Republican is Shane Scholer?
Yeah. You mentioned Ron Paul, Bachmann, Huntsman.
Well, yeah, and I'm just saying, you know, you've got the far evangelical hardcore right to the anarchist libertarian there. So, I mean, where in that spectrum does Shane fall?
I think I'm one of those folks that I am very, you know, I'm a person who's born again Christian, but it is against my religion to impose my religion on other people. That certainly has a lot of guidance in how I try to think through how government ought to go forth. But I'm not so libertarian that I don't believe that we should protect life, and I also believe that we should not do anything to perpetrate the drug industry. You know, so I think that there are some things that are appropriate for government to be part of, and so that's where I veer away from the libertarian mindset, because I think that when think of the gaming industry and what that does to the individual character of a man.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been a supporter of the casinos, and I've always turned down their donations because
I'm not even a supporter of the state lottery for all they say that does for us.
Right. Exactly. Because all it does is it takes people's hard-earned dollars and they spend it on the hope that they might get a good outcome. But it has to solve the problems of education in our state of Missouri.
That's right.
Schools still need more money. And if you look at oftentimes where these casinos go, as you well know, you end up having a lot of problems that are associated with nearby. And
that's right.
I'm not one of the people that's out to the casino. You know, I mean, the taxpayers made the decision, but I would never vote to support them.
And then we as a government and a society take those things and market them to the people who are most hurt by them.
That's exactly right.
So all right, now you told me that you went to Bolivar. I'm going to assume that where you're at now is something that you feel like you've pretty much always been. It's not something that you evolved into, more or less.
That's right, absolutely. And, you know, I think the one good thing about, you know, as you continue to grow older, you do have your convictions challenged, and I think that over time I've actually become more conservative over time and better over, you know, the ideas and the values that I believe in. And I think that's important. And that's where I go back to. A lot of times people, you know, I've always been a Republican, then they get into a setting where not everybody around them believes like they do, and they start wanting to become like them because they want to be part of the popular culture and elected government. And I think that's something that always have to try and exist when we know that it's not going to help out people. That's why I was comfortable of, you know, voting against the Obamacare money, the Obama bailout money. You know, I voted against that. I've also voted against, you know, statewide mandates. For example, there was one of the biggest mandates ever passed in our state for health insurance. A number of people voted for it, but I voted against that because I knew that was not the direction we wanted to take our state. And while I was in the minority of people in our caucus, I knew that was a conviction of value that I didn't want to betray, because we can't continue to add mandates to private health insurance in the state of Missouri and be able to pay for it as individual citizens, because it's going to continue to increase the cost of our health insurance. And as you well know, as you can do that, then you have less money to cover the things that you really need to have covered when they come up.
Outstanding. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here just real quick before we go. What are your aspirations, Shane?
You know, when I first, one of the first priorities I've always had is that whenever I run for something, I want to be asked. I was asked to run for state representative. I was asked to run for secretary of state. My belief is you do that job and you do it well, and then if another opportunity opens up because you've done your job well, then you look at that opportunity. But do the job you're given first and do it well. And then if other opportunities arise, then absolutely you move forward. But, you know, people, you know, I had lunch with Pastor John Marshall at Second Baptist this last Friday.
Uh-huh.
And he's been a tremendous pastor to me. And as we were right towards the end of our conversation, we were walking outside from having lunch, and I looked at him and I said, I'm not afraid to lose. And I've told people that, you know, going forward, and that's because I do not want to be defined by whether or not I'm elected to public office or not. If I get the opportunity to serve Missourians, I'll be grateful. But if I'm not, then the people have spoken, and I'm okay going back home and being with my family and being in the private sector and doing what I can there to be able to first serve my family and then make sure that, doing what I can to help out back home in our local.
All right, now step back from your Secretary of State race for just 1 second and handicap with me for a second. What is our most uphill battle in these executive offices?
I think probably the most uphill battle as far as the state offices, and we mentioned this earlier, is stopping what's coming down from the federal level and forms mandates to the various departments. I mean, you look at the Department of Natural Resources, and all too often, Department of Natural Resources, you know, they often almost become the junior partner of the EPA.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's something we really need to begin to look at ideas like nullification of federal laws at the state level. And you know, if you say nullification, essentially what you're saying is that we're going to make sure we protect the citizens of the state of Missouri first. And if this federal law was outside the scope of the Constitution and the state, we're going to stand up to it. We're going to say no. And I think that's why, you know, there's been such an effective outcry, you know, the federalization of health care, because it truly does not represent what you and I believe our Constitution sets forth. And frankly, the EPA has done the very exact same thing.
Yep.
On too many instances, and OSHA's another one. You know, you look at the continued, you know, job killing around regulations they put forth that have nothing to do with safety at the end of the day. And those are types of things that we need to be very conscientious about when we think about the Missouri Department of Labor, we think about the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, and all these different organizations that are literally taking the breath and life out of our Missouri businesses and Missourians in general, and preventing them from being able to earn their hard-earned living if they see that fit. Because of some onerous regulations somebody's out of in Washington that, you know, bureaucrats in Jefferson City are more than willing to help them carry out.
Okay, Representative Scholer, tell us where to find you on the internet, where to find you on Facebook, and what we can do for you.
Absolutely. You can find me on the internet at www.shaneschoeler.org, and that's shaneschoeller.org, and you can also find my Facebook information there as well as my Twitter information. And, you know, we've got a number of people who are going to be working very hard this coming weekend, making sure that we get out the vote for August 7th. And, for example, they can, Southwest Missouri, contact Taylor Howe at
573-293-2329.
Taylor, why don't you go and tell him? Hang on just a second.
All right.
417-533-2350.
2350. And you are who, sir? Taylor?
Taylor Howe. I'm the Southwest field representative for Shane.
Okay, we'll get that on the billboard at Missouri Grassroots Coalition as well. I'm assuming, of course, because I've done more than one or two of these interviews, that at that Missouri or at that ShaneShoulder.org address, we can give you some money, right?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. Now, my understanding is that we were having a little problems with our donations page earlier today, which is not normal.
Okay.
I'm hoping we've got that fixed, but they were trying to fix that earlier today. So if they go on this problem, they can certainly mail that to P.O. Box 54, Bolivar, Missouri, 65613. But I'm thinking it's probably fixed by now.
So the folks who are listening to us here, 1,340 at the moment, they've been so engrossed now in the Republican primary that they may not all realize that Robin will not be running.
That's right, and I have to let people know that quite a bit.
Who are you facing there?
His name is Jason Kander. He's in his second term, serving in the Missouri House in Kansas City. His main source of support has been trial attorneys and unions. And he is certainly not shy about his support for trial attorneys, unions, and the progressive liberal agenda of the Democrat Party. And he's certainly not going to be a friend to Missourians in general and the conservative values that most Missourians share. So I think it's very important that people get educated quickly, because I think we know the track that he's going to head down, and that we don't need another 4 years of Rob Carnahan carried out in the name of Jason Kander, but we know that's exactly what he's going to do.
Okay, probably then after the primary, what we'll probably try to do, if it works into your schedule, is have you back.
Okay.
And not so much to try to sell you to the crowd anymore, because that'll be a no-brainer when it's just you against the Democrat, but for you to teach us how to educate our people on what this opposition is and what we're fighting against here.
That'd be great.
Okay. All right. I thank you, Representative Scholler, for being along with us. This has been I've had a great time. I really enjoy these kind of things and finding out who people are. And you're headed for Willard, and our love to you and your family, and drive safe, and we'll talk to you very, very soon. Maybe talk to you I don't want to take you too much away from your celebration, but we may give you a call on our watch night show and see how things are going down there at Victory headquarters.
Well, that'd be good. And I don't know if Lisa's still there, but always good to be with Lisa as well.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Scholler.
Hey, all right. Thanks, Dave.
That was Representative Shane Scholler. He's running for Missouri Secretary of State. And that looks like a good bet for our folks. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. We're going to take a wrap for tonight. Lisa's already left us, and we're going to talk to you on Thursday night. It's the next edition of The Hour of Truth, where I do part one of my wrap of the entire primary season and tell you who my picks are for each of the big jobs in the state of Missouri. This is Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, The Hour of Truth, and that is a wrap. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.